Welcome to the CGOB Sports Show podcast. On this episode, we're talking with Chelsea Carey. She's taking over Jennifer Jones' old curling team with Carly Burgess, Emily Zacharias, and Lauren Lenentine. And then Kyle Capobianco, the AHL Defenseman of the Year, joins us to talk about that. A big honor and how the Moose plan to stay alive in the playoffs Thursday night. That's all coming up on the podcast. Big news in curling today as Chelsea Carey has a team again. The 39-year-old from Winnipeg, who now calls Calgary home, taking over for Jennifer Jones next season. She'll be joining forces with Carly Burgess, Emily Zacharias, and Lauren Lenentine after those three with Jones reach the Scotties final each of the last two seasons. The two-time national champion has played with a number of teammates since winning the 2019 Scotties. She took over Carey Anderson's old team for a season in 2020-21, curled out of Saskatchewan for a couple seasons with Julian Campbell. This past year was a fill-in skip for Jones as well as a Swiss team. And now she's back in Manitoba with a skilled group of young curlers who retain their Canadian team rankings points for next season, which means they were pre-qualified for the 2025 Scotties. Earlier today, I chatted with Chelsea and I asked her how she feels now that she is trying to fill Jennifer Jones' shoes. The news is out, and that's a bit of a characterization she didn't quite agree with.
Well, trust me, I'm not going to try to do that, but it feels great to have the news out. We've known for a little while here, but wanted to wait till after that Players' Championship and such. So very excited to have it out there.
So these are three young players you've played with before. What about them drew you to want to be their skip full time?
I mean, it's such a great opportunity. I played two amazing events with the girls, and going in not really knowing any of them at all, and to have the success that we had and for it to feel as easy and as seamless as it did is not that common. And that was, you know, quite lovely. Plus, you know, who doesn't want a couple of really young, eager, talented players who have been to the Jennifer Jones School of Curling for the last 2 years? I mean, that's just, that's not an opportunity that comes along every day.
The experience they've been able to glean going to back-to-back finals at the Scotties, I mean, that's invaluable experience for these three curlers in their 20s. What have you gleaned from talking to them about what it was like to play with Jones the last couple of years?
Yeah, I mean, they have nothing but great things to say about her. Obviously, they've learned a lot, and they've come in to that situation with such open minds, and they know they have a lot to learn, and they want to learn, and they're very mature for their age, which is nice, and they absorb everything. They're like a couple little sponges out there, which is what you want, and you know, the results have shown how beneficial that was for them.
So how did this come about? Did they approach you? Did you approach them?
Well, I mean, I played with them for a few events, so I was still in touch with them all, and when Jen's news came out, I didn't reach out to them before the Scotties because they had more important things to focus on than next season. You know, you got to try to be present in that. So I didn't send them anything until about a week or so after the Scotties, and just said that I wasn't sure what their plans were, but that I would love to be considered, and that, you know, I thought our time together went really well and was enjoyable and such. And a couple of weeks after that, we had an interview. My understanding is they talked to a few different people, and a couple of weeks after that, they called me and asked if I wanted to join the team.
So it is kind of like a job interview process.
It was in this case, yeah.
Is that rare?
I've never had it quite like that before, but it's becoming more and more common for sure.
I guess sometimes the skip can pick their team. In this case, you were interviewing for the skip position, right?
Yeah, I mean, normally you're not walking onto an established team. I mean, that makes sense for it to be more of an interview. I know it's been very public with Colton Flash's team, for example, that they went through the same kind of process with not only Mike, but a couple other people to make sure that everyone was on the same page and that they picked their best option, not necessarily from a shot making standpoint, but alignment on goals and work ethic and ways you're going to do things and all that kind of stuff, that those kind of soft skills that when you're joining a team mid cycle are important to try to accelerate as much as possible. So somebody who's as much of the same mindset as you can find is ideal in that sense.
Yeah, regarding the cycle, I was just going to ask about that because we saw so much change in 2022 after the last Winter Olympics, and that's generally where we see the most changes. We have been seeing some still year after year, mid-cycle, and I guess that's what's different about this specific news is that, you know, everything's about gearing up for the Olympics and knowing that, you know, the trials are less than 2 years away. How important was it for you to be able to join a team that was this established?
Well, it was either that or I just wasn't going to play this cycle. I was going to play some mixed doubles and kind of focus on that. And that was the decision that I made last season when I decided not to put a team together, is that it just didn't make sense in the middle of the cycle to try to start essentially from scratch. So the only way I was going to play was for the right opportunity. And this is the kind of opportunity you can only dream of, really. So it worked out coincidentally very well for me, but I was pretty much set in my head that I wasn't going to play, barring something unforeseen, which this was at that time.
So this news comes out, you have to wait still right now to actually suit up. So how do you get ready to go next season? What does the off season look like for you?
Oh, we have so much work to do before we start curling that it doesn't feel like that long to wait. Honestly, it feels like we don't have enough time to do all the things we need to do as far as just, I mean, it's new team. So there's just so much you have to do to establish norms and figure all that stuff out. We still haven't heard, you know, from Curling Canada about what national team program stuff looks like, what if there's funding, if there's whatever, what their training plans for us and requirements of us need to be, because they've changed basically all of their upper management at Curling Canada. So, you know, what do those things look like? There's a whole bunch of forms and paperwork usually and that kind of thing. And just spending some time talking about team roles and dynamics and what all that looks like, because it's a new team. So there's plenty to keep us busy in the off season. I'm not worried about that.
So will that involve Zoom calls, phone calls? Are you going to meet in person? How does that work?
No, I have no idea. You're asking questions that we haven't even talked about yet.
Okay. So jumping ahead a little bit. What's it been like for you to be more of an observer lately than actually being a part of the national scene?
I mean, I played, I think, 7 or 8 events last year, so it wasn't that much observing. But I mean, you never want to be watching the big stuff on TV. But like I said, when I made the decision not to put a team together, you know that that's what's going to happen. So I had plenty of time to kind of wrap my head around it. And I did a little bit of writing, which was really fun for me for a couple of those events. So I enjoyed that. And yeah, it was a bit weird, but and a bit tough for sure. But I knew that going in. So I was as mentally prepared for it as I could have been.
You get pre-qualified for the 2025 Scotties being a part of this team. It's going to be your first time there in a few years. Just getting to know that you're going back to the national championship, how does that feel?
Yeah, that's rare. Usually, I mean, it's going to be more common now, obviously, but you used to only get that if you were Team Canada. So that's a huge kind of a load off, but also, you know, it can be hard not coming into nationals off the high of winning provincials. That isn't necessarily good for everybody, and you need to be prepared for that in a different way than what you normally would be doing and coming in off of some momentum and some adrenaline and stuff from winning your provincial. So there's some work to be done there, but very grateful, obviously, to know that, and it allows us to plan accordingly and prepare accordingly to be ready to go when we do get to the Scotties.
You've been doing mixed doubles curling as well. I'm curious, from a Skip's point of view, how playing mixed doubles has improved your game, changed your game when it comes to skipping.
I think the biggest difference for me, because I don't sweep in mixed doubles, Colin, my teammate, doesn't let me sweep. He sweeps everything. So there was none of that side of it for me. I think what I learned, though, is the communication in the men's game from the sweeper to the people and the person in the house or the thrower or whatever is at a higher level than it traditionally has been in the women's game. So I learned a lot about how to maximize that communication from playing mixed doubles and especially from playing mixed doubles with Colin. So I've brought that to some of the women's teams that I've been on since then, and it really has elevated the game. Now this team is pretty elevated already, so there'll be less of that I can teach them, just because of, you know, Jennifer knows all that stuff too, obviously, and has taught them that. But I think that's the biggest difference for me, is just learning how to maximize that communication between the sweeper and the person in the house so that you get the best result. Throwing the rock well is one thing, but if you're not managing it well once it's been let go and making the most of what you have once it's out of the person's hand, you're not going to win very much.
I'm curious, just from seeing the season that Rachel Holman just had, one of the best we've ever seen, how is that going to, do you think, raise the standard for everyone else in Canada trying to keep up with them and the kind of quality we might see over the next year or two?
Yeah, I mean, I think you saw Carrie's team do it for a few years, and now Rachel's team is doing it. So, I mean, it's there's always a team that's doing that. For years, it was Jennifer. We were all chasing her. And I mean, even with it, like, they won a slam this year and have been in the last two Scotties finals. And so there's, you know, luckily for Canadian curling fans, we've got lots of really good teams in women's. Unfortunately for us, that means it's harder to win, but that's good. You make everybody push their boundaries and their limits and find new ways and constantly be evaluating. Even if you just came off a win, what can we do to be better? And the world is driving us to do that in Canada. And then within Canada, you know, those teams are driving the rest of us to try to keep up. Like you said, I mean, you heard Mark Kennedy call it the Guju effect when they replaced Brendan with Brad. Everyone's trying to keep up.
Well, Chelsea, appreciate your time tonight. Thanks for this, and best of luck with everything going forward.
Thank you very much. No problem.
Chelsea Carey, the new skip of what was Team Jennifer Jones. And that's one of the changes that has been announced lately, as she mentioned. Brad Jacobs, yes, that news we knew last week, taking over the former Team Botcher. But other news, we knew that Glenn Howard was retiring, and Scott Howard, well, it is official. It was made official yesterday that Scott Howard is now going to be the full-time skip of Team Howard. Glenn is going to coach, but the Cam brothers will be joining the team. They're previously with Team Epping. David Mather's stepping away from competitive curling. And how about this? Lisa Weigle is returning to four-player curling. She's joined Laura St-Georges out of Quebec, as she spent a lot of time with Team Holman, two-time Olympian, three-time Scotties champion. So that is becoming an interesting squad, with Jamie Sinclair joining them too, dual citizen. And that's what we got. The Manitoba Moose began their postseason journey last night in Texas. It was a 6-3 loss to the Texas Stars. Despite being outshot 15-5 in the first, the Moose got on the board first, thanks to Daniel Torgerson, with just over 4 minutes left in the opening frame. But the Stars answered back just 37 seconds later, and then scored three more in the second to take a 4-1 lead. Nikita Chibrikov scored late in the second, 4-2. Parker Ford at 6:19 of the third, it's 4-3. But Maverick Bork, just 68 seconds later, restored the two-goal lead. The Stars never looked back. So it is a best of three. Game two tomorrow, Moose got to win it, or their season is done. Ahead of yesterday's game, defenseman Kyle Capobianco was named the Eddie Shore Award winner as the league's top defenseman. It's the second time in franchise history that a Moose has won the award, after flashing the pan Sammy Niku won it in 2018. The 26-year-old from Mississauga, Ontario, also had a couple assists in last night's game, and this afternoon I had the chance to chat with the Blue Liner. Well, Kyle, let's start with game one last night. How do you think the game went, and what changed in that second period for the Moose?
I think overall they just were more aggressive. They were on their toes. They were ready to go from the start. I think the game just kind of got away from us, and then I liked our pushback a little bit in the third, and then it was just a bit too late.
So you cut the lead to 4-3 when Parker Ford scores, but when the other team scores just over a minute later, how demoralizing is that?
Yeah, it's tough. In playoff hockey, the momentum swings side to side, and they took advantage there. Got back with the next goal, because that goal was going to be crucial, and it kind of took the wind out of our sails.
So playing in a best of three, I mean, tomorrow you know that your season's on the line, so how's your group feeling right now?
Yeah, it's kind of exciting. I mean, there's no time to dwell or be disappointed in ourselves. We just got to be hungry and ready to go tomorrow, and I think it's, as a group, we're excited.
So those two games you played against Texas last week, there was no bearing on the standings. You guys did well in those games, but did that have any impact on what we saw yesterday?
Yeah, I mean, I think they helped them. They came ready to play. I don't want to say we took them lightly, but I think we just weren't ready to go from the start. And I think that's something that we can't afford tomorrow. We got to play desperate and be on our toes.
So you did score first in the game, which is good, especially on the road, but you give up four straight. How important is starting strong again tomorrow?
Oh, it's huge. We'll have a good crowd tomorrow, and they'll be loud. So if we can get the crowd out of it and kind of push them back on their heels, that'll be huge for us.
So looking at the season as a whole, you were named the AHL's Defenseman of the Year yesterday. What was it like to learn that? When did you find out that you were getting that honor? Was it yesterday, or did you know beforehand?
Yeah, I found out yesterday, and I was just really happy. I called all my family and friends, and they were all super excited as well. It was a very, very fortunate situation, and I'm very honored. This year was a great year, and I couldn't have done it without the people supporting me and a great team staff here.
Was that a confidence boost going into the playoffs to learn that on the day of game one?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it was a little bit of confidence and some rising from the guys for sure.
So what was the big difference this season for you? What propelled you to a season where you could win an award like this?
I think the trust from the coaches was huge, and then just to be able to play every day, be in the lineup, and have that confidence to kind of play games back to back. For the last couple of years, it's been in and out of lineups, and it's kind of hard to get the real game feel. And I think this year I've been just trying to take advantage of playing every night.
How much do you think, you know, the last couple of years of playing games in the NHL, as you mentioned, in and out of the lineup, but being in NHL games, now playing a full season in the AHL, how much do you think your level increased?
Huge. When you play in the NHL, you got to make plays quick. Guys are going to be on you, and you got to close quick. So I think the speed there helped not slow the game down in the American League, but allowed me to be quicker with my decisions both offensively and defensively.
Did you have 12 goals on your bingo card before the season started?
No. I think I started with a couple, and then I hit a dry spot. I work with the skills coach here in Manitoba, and he always preaches to me to shoot the puck, and so the last stretch I was trying to shoot it a bit more.
When was the last time? I mean, I've got your Hockey DB page here. It goes back to OJHL Oakville, and 12 is the most you've had in a season, dating back to at least 2012-13. Do you know if you had 12 or more in a season when you were younger?
I can't remember really scoring that much, but no.
Beyond the playoffs here, how do you feel about where your pro prospects sit at age 26, turning 27 this summer?
I feel good. I feel ready to go to finish this year strong, and then to go from that, have a good summer, and go into next year, wherever that is.
How have you liked your time in Winnipeg?
I've really enjoyed it, both with the Jets and the Moose. The whole organization is great. The way they treat their players and the city itself was great. Me and my girlfriend have loved their time in Winnipeg.
You were a part of the Coyotes organization since they drafted you 9 years ago. How did you feel learning that they were moving to Utah?
Yeah, a little bit bittersweet. I mean, I know a lot of the guys there were building homes and were excited to make Scottsdale or Phoenix their home for forever. So they're a little bit conflicted with that, but I think they're both, I'm excited for them as well for the new opportunity in Utah. It looks like they're going to be taking advantage of a good situation and an owner who's really invested in the team.
I'm not asking you to dump on Phoenix, Scottsdale, and the market there, but what was it like playing there, and how different is it playing in a Canadian market?
I love my time in Phoenix and Scottsdale. My uncle lives there, and I go back there for the summer. It's good. I think with the right arena or right setup, they would thrive. But in the Canadian market, it's just the media is way more prevalent. The after practice or after morning skate, having to talk to media, they're just more around and more aware for sure.
Are you able to follow the Jets when you're playing with the Moose? Is that something that you're trying to do when you're down in the AHL, or do you just try to focus on what the Moose are doing?
Oh, definitely. I try to watch almost all their games when I can. If it's not, we're not playing at the same time. Last night, as soon as our game was done, I turned on to watch the second and third of their game. Just like to watch their game. They're entertaining, good style hockey to watch. Also, a lot of friends that I made last year, I like to keep up with them and see how they're playing.
We'll let you go on that note, Kyle. Thanks for this. Appreciate your time, and best of luck the rest of the playoffs, however long it goes.
Thank you.
Kyle Capobianco of the Manitoba Moose. Game 2 tomorrow night in their best of 3 series is at 7 o'clock. Streaming live at cgob.com/sports. We'll take some of it on the show tomorrow night for sure.
Well, thank you very much for listening to the CJOB Sports Show podcast. If you like what you heard, guess what? You can hear more every weeknight on CJOB from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Thanks again for tuning in. Subscribe if you'd like. We're available on iTunes and other places, I'd imagine. So farewell until we meet again.
Come on and thanks for all the fish. So sad that it should come to this. We try to warn you of the deal. You may not share our intellect, which might explain your